Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Iris today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, October 16th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's turn to the weather forecast first thing. We'll have a calm and cool start to the work week with a mix of sun and clouds and highs in the 50s and 60s on Monday and Tuesday. Our next chance for precipitation is expected for the middle of the upcoming week as a cold front moves through the area. Therefore, scattered showers will be possible on Wednesday and Thursday. High temperatures will stay in the 60s Wednesday and through the end of this week. Now we have the Week in Iowa section. Iowa leaders condemn attack on Israel. Iowa U.S. Senator Joni Ernst visited Israel with a congressional delegation shortly after the country suffered an unprecedented surprise attack by the Hamas militant group last week. Ernst said Hamas was a terrorist organization that needs to be, quote, eradicated from the face of the earth, unquote. She called for freezing $6 billion in Iranian assets that were part of the prisoner swap brokered by President Joe Biden. More than 2,000 people had died in Israel and Gaza nearly a week into the war as of Thursday. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds ordered Iowa flags at half-staff to honor the lives lost in Israel last week and said Iowa, quote, stands in solidarity with Israel and their right to defend themselves, unquote. Next, Hinson and Nunn call for House order. As U.S. House Republicans scrambled to elect a speaker last week, Representative Steve Scalise, a Republican from Louisiana, withdrew his bid after it was clear he did not have the votes to wield the gavel. Iowa U.S. Representatives Ashley Hinson and Zach Nunn called for the party to unify around a candidate so they can pass budgets and send aid to Israel. Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, the far-right leader of the Freedom Caucus, was seeking to earn the party's support as of Friday. State revenue from taxes to decline. Iowa's revenue from taxes and other sources will fall by nearly 1% in the current fiscal year, according to recent state panel estimates. The downturn is planned and the result of tax cuts made by Republican leaders in recent years. Here are some quotations from last year. Quote, Iowans mourn for the families of those killed by Hamas in Israel. Hamas's brutality shows no bounds, with reports of Holocaust survivors, women and children, taken by Hamas militants from their homes as hostages or brutally murdered. Today and every day, Iowa stands in solidarity with Israel and their right to defend themselves. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds on Hamas attack in Israel. And here's a quote by U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson. Quote, there is wide bipartisan support in Congress for Israel, so I'm hopeful we can come together and put politics and disagreement on other issues aside and show our friends we're going to stay true to our word and get them what they need, unquote. Under odds and ends, 2024 watch. Former Republican Texas Congressman Will Hurd dropped his bid for the presidency last week, endorsing Nikki Haley of South Carolina. That leaves a dozen candidates in the running for the Republican nomination, which will kick off with the Iowa caucuses on January 15th. And candidates on Israel. Republican presidential candidates roundly blamed President Joe Biden for the attacks on Israel by Hamas last weekend. They pointed to the $6 billion in funding the Biden administration released to Iran in a prisoner swap earlier this year. Administration officials say none of that money has been spent. Now, over the water cooler, Davenport Mayor, incumbent Mayor Mike Mattson, and State Representative Ken Croken will advance to the general election for Davenport Mayor after taking the top two spots in a primary last week. Croken has been critical of Mattson's leadership following a deadly building collapse and dysfunction on the city council. and Mercy Iowa City bid. A Texas firm outbid University of Iowa hospitals and clinics to purchase Mercy Iowa City, a hospital that went bankrupt earlier this year. Preston Howell Community Capital will run a nonprofit community hospital through American Healthcare Systems, the firm said. Next, 18,900 ESA applications approved. The state announced last week it had approved nearly 18,900 applications for private school education, so-called saving accounts, for the current school year. Officials did not say how many students are currently using those accounts to attend private school, and said that information will be available in December. The accounts allow students to use up to $7,600 in public school funds to pay for private school education. Iowa families submitted nearly 30,000 applications for the accounts. Some were rejected because they did not meet the residency or income requirements, while others were closed voluntarily. This year, the program was open to all public school students and private school students and families making up to 300% of the federal poverty line. Next, we have Clark and the Hawkeyes to tip off at Kinnick. The Iowa women's basketball team will play an exhibition game at Kinnick Stadium on Sunday against DePaul University. The game at the outdoor football stadium is expected to break an NCAA women's basketball attendance record. And finally, Iowa Attorney General targets Massachusetts law. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd led a court brief last week challenging a Massachusetts law that dictates the living condition of sows who produce pork sold in the state. The law closely mirrors a California law that the U.S. Supreme Court upheld in May. Now from the front page, we have Hickory House back after fire, all new and just the same. Story filed by Donald Promnitz. Dateline, Waterloo. And the story begins with a photograph taken of the top of the restaurant showing their logo and some fancy lighting. And the caption says, "The D&K Hickory House is back open after being destroyed in a fire last year." As the Chillcoats stood in a field and watched firefighters sift through the wreckage of the D&K Hickory House in October, matriarch Karen Chillcoat promised her children they would persevere. Quote, "We are going to rebuild," Lutricia Chillicoat recalled her mother saying, "We are not going out this way," unquote. Reconstruction started March 2nd. 12 days later, Karen died. But her promise to rebuild the family restaurant came to fruition. The Hickory House burned down the day before Halloween, hours after a car crashed into the side of the building, cracking a gas line. The restaurant had been in the family since 1952, and just 6 days before the fire, celebrated 70 years as a family-owned business. Patrons saw the Hickory House as a Waterloo institution, and when the old building came down, the outpouring of well wishes was immediate. Quote, "The support from the community has been, again, unbelievable," Lutricia Chillicoat said. Quote, "I don't realize how many people were affected by the Hickory House. Not necessarily our family, but the Hickory House. So it's been very nice, very humbling, very encouraging," unquote. The restaurant first reopened on October 3rd for a private party before announcing on social media it was officially back in business on October 5th. Chillicoat made the post at 9 a.m. and 5 minutes later, the phone was ringing off the hook. Quote, "We're very fortunate. It's been busy. We've been booked every night with reservations for the month of October," Chillicoat said. "We have added Wednesdays to be open. Starting in November, we're just going to go back to Thursday, Friday, Saturday." Stacy Bentley was one customer happy the restaurant is back. She said her husband, Russ, went to the Hickory House while they were dating, and 42 years later, they're still loyal patrons. Sitting in a large table with friends, Bentley said the night was made special by the regulars flooding in like they did before the fire. Quote, "This is so special, and I'm so glad that they rebuilt here, because it's an icon, and everyone in Waterloo and the whole entire Cedar Valley in Iowa knows," Bentley said. "I've been here for 15 minutes, and I've seen so many people I know. It's family," unquote. The Hickory House was known as much for its decor as its food, with old John Deere tractor models and paintings festooning the walls, a reminder of Waterloo's heritage. When rebuilding, Chillcote said they wanted to make it as close to the original as possible. With the exception of ADA-compliant bathrooms, they succeeded. Down to the tractors. Chillcote acknowledged a few things were different, but it's the same Hickory House. Quote, "One thing I will say, the first customer that came in, he said, 'It looks different, but it feels the same,'" Chillcote said. "And I said, 'That was the best compliment you could give me,'" unquote. Another person happy to be back is Cherise Clark. Clark has been a patron for 20 years, coming every Thursday with her husband, Dennis. Quote, "It's absolutely amazing," she said of the restaurant reopening. "We have this table every Thursday night, same table, same time. And I'm telling you, they haven't missed one single beat. Everything is exactly the same." Unfortunately, Dennis died in May, but Clark said there was no better way to honor his memory than dinner at their favorite place. Quote, "He would be so proud," Clark said. "And I know he and Karen are both celebrating upstairs, having a scotch on the rocks together," unquote. A 360-degree view of history. UNI team builds a link to campus of the past using augmented reality. Story filed by Andy Malone, and begins with a photograph of University of Northern Iowa professor of interactive studies and director of Fortepen, Iowa, Bettina Fabos, and student Marcelo Acosta line up a 360-degree camera to take a picture of the UNI Commons building Wednesday in Cedar Falls. The dateline is Cedar Falls. Several University of Northern Iowa professors and students are going where no Iowans have gone before. It's a different kind of space than Star Trek, Captain James T. Kirk explored in the hit 1960s science fiction series. Interactive Digital Studies professor Bettina Fabos is leading a project called Main Street 360, creating a software application with a 360-degree augmented view of the present-day campus. Think Google Street View, with historical photos geolocated or superimposed throughout the realm in the exact locations where they were taken decades ago. The photos will be organized from the university's founding in 1876 to the 2000s. They will include historical captions and blurbs based on newspaper archives, literature, and other sources detailing what's happening at the moment and their significance to the decade. For example, a photo of campus from the 1940s might reveal where tennis courts were once located near the Campanile, now on Campus Street. Quote, "There's nothing that connects time and place the way we're connecting time and place," said Fabos. Quote, "There are apps that do geolocation, but we're really interested in story and the context and being able to group the photos by decade so that you can actually experience a place virtually, and that's what makes our project a cut above the others," unquote. The prototype, a URL link anyone will be able to access, is expected to be available as soon as March or April. And the team hopes to have a final project ready in 2026, the university's sesquicentennial anniversary. The university recently landed a competitive National Endowment for the Humanities Digital Humanities Advancement Grant of $150,000 to build the augmented reality environments for the UNI campus and Ottumwa. Quote, "We're pioneers. You'll be able to walk from one image to another, and the images will constantly pop up," unquote. The free photos come from a variety of places, including Fort Penn, Iowa, an online photo history cooperative portal where eventually all images will be uploaded. Eventually, the website will include a tool directing users to the Main Street 360 application and will have more features. Quote, I can be in this image here on Fort Penn website, and there will be some kind of indicator, go to Main Street 360, and then you'll be able to see this image in the place where it was, and you'll be able to start walking through 1920s UNI, said Fabos. Volunteers also gather photos from families, the Rod Library Special Collections, family inheritances, newspapers, and other means. The tool will also include text relevant to the individual photo, but also to interpret each decade. There will be a time-lapse feature for locations with photos from multiple decades and an ability to add unique details in certain photographs. Quote, we're trying to create some consistent facts relevant across each decade, so there's going to be a snapshot verbally of where you and I was in 1880, for instance, she said. How many students? What were the most popular majors? What buildings were on campus? What was the major event? This is you and I at this decade. This is what was happening. This is the main issue at the time, maybe a milestone enrollment total or new major, unquote. Next, Sturgis Falls Overman Park activities parade on hold. Board members step aside. Andy Malone filed this story, and the dateline is Cedar Falls. Financial troubles have enveloped the annual Sturgis Falls celebration that could drastically reduce the number of activities offered at next summer's festival. The majority of the Sturgis Falls Board of Directors has declined to continue their roles, and events at Overman Park are on hold until further notice. And at this point in the article, we have a photograph of young children parading, and the caption says, Team Ninja U members were waived during the 2023 Sturgis Falls Parade in Cedar Falls on Saturday. Quote, the Sturgis Falls 2023 fiscal year ended October 1st, wrote Jay Stoddard in an emailed statement on Friday. Quote, this is also the time the terms of the board members end. They can ask to have their term renewed for the next year or retire. 9 members did not renew their terms. Due to the Saturday thunderstorms during this year's Sturgis Falls celebration, the normal revenue generated from the carnival, food concessions, and beer were down 50%, unquote. According to an October 5th post on the official Sturgis Falls Celebration, Inc. Facebook page, quote, due to the city council not requiring competing events to help pay for the family events in Overman Park and the lack of financial sponsorships and volunteers, all of the family events in and around Overman Park are on hold, unquote. The post states all Gateway Park events, including the carnival and the headlining bands, Not Quite Brothers, and 16 Candles, have been booked and will go on as planned. Quote, to go forward in 2024, the Overman Park events, the Kids Way and Parade, will need additional sponsorship dollars. There may be groups to manage the events, but without startup money, these events are on hold, Stoddard said in the email to the Courier. Quote, since the city does not require competing events to help pay for the family and children's events, we feel the city should be the main sponsor for these events. All Gateway Park events, including the carnival, the Gateway Market, and the Gateway Stage Entertainment, are unaffected, unquote. In 2021, Sturgis Falls organizers called for an end to special event permits issued in the area roughly between the Cedar River and Franklin Street to the west and from West 1st Street South to West 7th Street. An attempt to prohibit competing events on downtown public property during the celebration failed in 2021 in a 4-3 vote of the City Council, according to Courier Archives. The Cedar Basin Jazz Festival Incorporated is the other big organization running completely separate events. The Cedar Basin Music Festival, among them, in the city, and coincides with Sturgis every year. Residents also have taken to Facebook and created an online petition to express concerns about the future of what's deemed the, quote, largest completely free annual city celebration in the state of Iowa, unquote, after a post about activities, including the parade, being on hold. Megan Russell created the Preserve Sturgis Falls Activities and Parade in Overman Park, change.org petition, that has garnered close to 70 signatures. Only two board members, Stoddard and Steve Cunningham, are currently listed on the Sturgis website. In the 2023 program, Stoddard, Deb Stoddard, Jill Kennedy, Pete Downs, Chuck Frost, Laura Sweeney, Don Sweeney, Amanda Cohen, Rick King, Steve Cunningham, Dalton Blackford, Rose Miller, Jim Box, Terry Engel, and Jenna Engel were all listed as board members. Quote, I think everybody's just trying to figure things out, said Miller in a voicemail Thursday, confirming she was formerly the parade director. Next, Cedar Falls Council considers parking ramp study. Consultant may study feasibility of parking structure downtown. Story filed by Andy Malone, and the dateline is Cedar Falls. The City Council will consider Monday hiring a consultant to study and provide options for a first-ever parking ramp in downtown Cedar Falls. The council meets at 7 p.m. in City Hall, 220 Clay Street, to consider voting on the $39,343 agreement with Fishbeck, a construction, engineering, and architecture firm with offices in Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. According to a memo from Parking and Administrative Supervisor Marcy Breitbach, the company would conduct a feasibility study to, quote, identify the need for a downtown parking ramp, pricing structure for paid parking in and around the ramp, and options and costs of parking ramps, unquote. The firm was one of three to submit a proposal to the city for study. The city has completed downtown parking evaluations in the past, but seen no progress on a project that's been heavily debated for years. But the council is looking again at the proposal. A dramatic change in its makeup will follow the November election and could affect plans. Mayor Rob Green and three council members with expiring terms, Susan DeBurr, Dave Sires, and Simon Harding, are not seeking re-election. The city estimates between the land acquisition and construction, the cost now would be north of $20 million, two-thirds of the cost to reconstruct the portion of Main Street between 6th Street and University Avenue. The council Monday will also weigh a $450,000 agreement with Strand Associates of Madison, Wisconsin, for planning services at its wastewater treatment plant in advance of an estimated $112.4 million upgrade spurred by environmental regulations. The firm was one of three to submit proposals for the job. The cost is only for the initial design work to determine the technologies best suited for the unique wastewater treatment needs, providing a guide for the remainder of the design process, unquote. In other business, the council will do the following. Consider rescinding the Imagine College Hill vision plan for future development in the area. The resolution comes after a recommendation made by DeBurr, Sires, Dustin Ganfield, and Daryl Cruz in committee earlier this month. Mayor Rob Green has told the Courier might veto that action if the council approves it. And hold a public swearing-in ceremony for new police dog Buna, Cedar Falls' first canine officer in 20 years. And agreements with Kubica Corporation on land conveyance and a partial tax exemption to allow the company to move forward with constructing new facilities in the city's industrial park. And lastly, authorize the acquisition of easements and fee titles from 36 properties in advance of the reconstructions of West Viking Road from Union Road to Production Drive, as well as the North Cedar Heights area along Woodland Drive and East Ridgewood Drive to Greenwood Avenue. The West Viking Road project includes improvements all the way down to the Hudson Road corridor. Next, we have testimony in ex-Clarksville cop's sexual exploitation trial is underway. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline is Allison. Prosecutors said a former Clarksville police lieutenant violated his oath when he developed a relationship with a teenage girl who was a victim in one of his investigations. Quote, instead of honoring his oath to protect and to serve, the defendant used his position to commit the crime of sexual exploitation of a minor, Assistant Iowa Attorney General Israel Kodiega told jurors Wednesday as testimony began in the trial of Michael William Tobin Jr. Tobin, 35, is charged with 11 counts of sexual exploitation. It took more than 10 minutes for Kodiega to read the charges out loud in court. Tobin pleaded not guilty, and his attorneys declined to outline their case in opening statements. Tobin had been a lieutenant in the Clarksville Police Department. Prosecutors allege he solicited and exchanged images with two teens using Snapchat and a Google Docs file in February 2022. He also is charged with sharing child porn videos and images acquired in a prior investigation with one of the teens in the fall of 2021. Kodiega said the sharing of the images was not for law enforcement purposes. Quote, he did it for his own sexual interests, Kodiega said. Authorities alleged Tobin also had sexual contact with the teen at the heart of the case when she was 16, and with another teen, but there are no charges regarding the sexual contact. He also had sex with the teen's older sister, according to testimony. Tobin first met the teen when she was 15 years old as part of an investigation into a sex offender named Cody Michael Blue, who had been accused of soliciting pictures of girls in exchange for alcohol and cigarettes. Months later, after Blue had been arrested, Tobin saw the teen at Pioneer Days. They talked, and she and her friends made a TikTok video with him. Kodiega said the team later took part in the police department's ride-along program that allows civilians to accompany officers on patrol. On the first ride, Tobin mentioned the Cody Blue investigation and told the girl he liked the pictures he sent to Blue, according to her account. In the fall of 2021, Tobin allegedly showed the teen evidence seized in the Cody Blue case that included 10 sexual images and videos of other girls who were victims and had submitted images to Blue. The files were on a computer, she testified. Quote, it was Michael Tobin who was controlling the computer, the teen testified on Wednesday. She said Tobin made jokes about them. She described some of the material she witnessed and said she recognized two of the girls as classmates in her school. The teen's sister said she was also at the police station when Tobin was showing the material. She said Tobin joked about the victim. She said she looked away. Quote, I didn't want to see the pictures of the naked girls because that's disgusting, the sister said. The girls brought the matter to a school counselor, and Tobin eventually discovered something was going on, according to testimony. Waverly Shell Rock High School principal David Fox said he soon received a phone call from Tobin identifying himself as a police officer in an apparent attempt to find out what the school officials knew. Quote, he seemed to be fishing for how much of the Google Doc we had, Fox said. According to earlier testimony, the teen had deleted the incriminating material to keep the officer from getting in trouble. Fox said Tobin's demeanor on the phone changed and he appeared more relaxed when he learned the document the school found had little in it. And now, listeners, we want to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, October 16th, on IRIS, I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, this announcement.
Imagine someone hiding a gambling problem. How exhausting it must be, seeing the losses pile up and feeling powerless to control it. Now imagine it's someone you love, your spouse, your child, your friend. Talk to them to understand where they're coming from, because anyone can have a gambling problem. They just need help getting their life back. Call 1-800-BETS-OFF to get help for them and you.
Now let's turn to the opinion section. Our first editorial comes to us from the Storm Lake Times Pilot and was written by the editor, Art Cullen. Title is, Bear Down Against the Pitch Count. There went our buddy Dan Smith at 73. God bless. Brother John wrote about his classmate Friday. I asked John how he was feeling. He coughed. We proofread the obituaries warily. Friends keep showing up there. At 66, you have to have a strategy before getting out of the car. Thoughts of the inevitable are hard to avoid. John asked if I asked for a senior citizen discount. Well, no, I never think about that. He suggested that we brothers should get together since, you know, Brother Tom is 80 and not getting any younger. Yeah, I suppose we should, but we got a paper to get out, and can't we just do that some other time? Maybe when I get old? As long as there is a paper to get out, death can wait. Son Tom could write the editorials, but there is so much I have to say, and such a short time to say it. I have written more than 2,000 personal columns over 40 years, and maybe twice as many editorials, and still don't have it quite right because, obviously, the editorial we have not gotten our point across. We could have had the world's problem solved, or at least made Iowa a little less backwards. We have wasted a lot of ink to make up for time lost. Too bad sloth is my way and slouch is my position. You must muster yourself erect and suggest that we are wasting our prospects in the sweetest little spot on earth. Mark Twain, who died in 1910 at the age of 74, said something like living life fully overcomes the fear of your own demise. He also said that Adam did us a favor by bringing on mortality. And he said this, quote, I do not fear death. I had been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it, unquote. I may have used that quote before, but what the hell? It does say it all. The absence of bills, threats, noxious people, and deadlines seems like heaven. I do believe in God and guardian angels and saints cheering from some sort of dugout bench along third baseline in the clouds, communing and drinking Scotch whiskey without hangover. I would like to believe that my impure thoughts are just that, and I never murdered anyone or lied to the IRS. I can present my clippings to St. Peter, who might deem one of 100 worthy to keep for recommendation and throw the rest of them into the inferno. That would be a good showing. You just never know. The doctor is plumbing that vague pain in my derriere. It could get me. Or that livestock truck could. I know I should give up my addictions, but rationalize it by saying I want to have my wits about me when the hooded man with the scythe taps on my shoulder. I want to have a good line ready like, quote, man, can you not see how Iowa's regressive tax system holds people down? This demands comment. Stand back, unquote. He may tell you to go for broke and give him hell, old man. Your fastball still might have some hop. Use your pitch count wisely. Like this, what I told the folks at Lakeview who gathered Saturday to hear my ramblings. Quote, State Senator Steve Kettering, Republican from Lakeview, made real progress with the Democratic governor, Tom Vilsack. We created a lake restoration fund of about $9 million annually that benefits Lakeview today. It's a drop in the bucket for the challenges our lakes face, but it is real and meaningful. It shows what we can do when we clear the partisanship from our sight and see what our communities actually need. Clean lakes, diverse ownership and structure of agriculture, healthy aquifers, and busy main streets with independent proprietors. Quote, okay, so I dream. But we had that once. We had clean water before 1980. We had independent pork producers who traded in an open market. They traded pickups every other year, and there were twice as many farmers. I am not just wallowing in nostalgia. If we could have healthy communities 50 years ago, is the force of consolidation immutable? Unquote. No, it is not. Not in a healthy democracy. When it boils down to it, that's all you've got. The freedom to confront fear, to present a good list of clippings, and to hand off a voice for democracy strong enough to be heard in your little corner of the world. You hope that on that final strike, you can walk into that cornfield knowing you gave it what you could, but the damned umpire was blind. Next, we have a piece titled, Use the Hemingway Trick to Supercharge Your Morning Productivity. This one was written by Jessica Stillman. Advice abounds on how to design a super productive morning routine for yourself. You know what's a lot harder to find? Advice on how to actually get yourself to stick with your plan. If you want to supercharge your morning productivity, what's usually lacking isn't knowledge of what you need to do. It's knowledge of how to motivate yourself to do it. A recent article on Inc.com's sister site, Fast Company, reminded me I actually already know a great trick to make getting in the groove in the morning much easier for entrepreneurs. It comes from an unlikely source, celebrated author Ernest Hemingway. Many, many years ago, I was a bright-eyed grad student pursuing an MFA in creative writing. The biggest lesson I took away from that experience was that I didn't have the constitution to be a literary author, but I also learned several valuable skills, from how to thoughtfully receive negative feedback to how classic storytelling structure works, and also accumulated extensive knowledge of famous authors' advice for young writers. There are several bookshelves worth of guidelines and memoirs out there that run along these lines, the contents of which I have mostly totally forgotten. But then I read an excerpt from a new book, Timewise, by organizational psychologist Amantha Imber, on Fast Company's site. In it, Imber relates strategies employed by a number of experts to help them get going in the morning, including this tip from the University of Oxford academic Rachel Botsman. Quote, a really easy trick I learned is, if you're in the flow the day before, don't finish that paragraph. Get halfway through the paragraph and then stop. Write the next sentence the following day because it makes it really easy to pick up. Days where you've completed something and you're starting again, they're harder because you're starting the engine from scratch, unquote. I thought. I've definitely heard that somewhere else before. Ernest Hemingway may have been famous for his heroic drinking, macho exploits, and long hours in Parisian cafes. But despite his prototypically bohemian lifestyle, he was also extremely productive. He turned out at least 16 books and won a Nobel Prize. In a 1935 interview with Esquire, he explained one of the secrets to his impressive output. Quote, the best way is to always stop when you are going good and when you know what will happen next. If you do that every day when you're writing a novel, you will never be stuck, Hemingway revealed, urging other writers to try his method of stopping when you still have plenty of momentum. This advice was legendary when I was doing my MFA, and I myself tried it out when I was struggling to finish a story. Hemingway's trick couldn't always overcome my self-consciousness and lack of skill, but it certainly helped. But since then, it had completely slipped my mind. Imber's article not only reminded me of this advice, but also spurred me to consider that it might be useful in just about any area of knowledge work. I'm not the only one intrigued by Hemingway's advice. Scientists have run formal studies to test if it works, and the results, at least according to this BBC Workfile article, were generally positive, which may explain why so many time use experts from both the business and the literary worlds agree that if you end your day mid-task, you remove one of the biggest barriers to morning productivity. The ability to get started straight off without any head scratching creates a slick on-ramp back into work. So, next time you're in a good groove working on a project toward the end of the day, remember Hemingway and consider closing your laptop well before you've run out of ideas and energy. There are plenty of other ways to spend that last bit of your workday. This may feel a little unnatural at first, but by leaving some momentum to spare, you'll make getting back in the groove the next day a whole lot easier. Now let's turn to obituaries. Marion Christina Odom, age 95 of Waterloo, died October 10, 2023. Marion was born August 8, 1928, the daughter of Einar and Lillian Anderson Jacobson in rural Cedar Falls, Iowa. Marion graduated from East Waterloo High School in 1947. She was a homemaker and later was employed by the Arthur Davis Agency in Cedar Falls, retiring in 1990. Marion loved music, especially classic country, western, and gospel. She sang, played piano, and electric bass guitar. Marion's hobbies included crocheting afghans and growing houseplants. She enjoyed family parties and traveling around the U.S. Marion's family would like you to wear her favorite color of blue to the service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the American Cancer Society. The memorial visitation will be Wednesday, October 18th, from 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, 4031 Lafayette Road in Evansdale. And a memorial service will be held on Wednesday, October 18th at 11 a.m. at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, 4031 Lafayette Road in Evansdale. There will be a private family burial at Greenwood Cemetery in Cedar Falls. Arrangements are being made with Parrott and Wood Chapel of Memories at 965 Home Plaza, Waterloo, Iowa. Their phone number is 319-232-3235. And condolences may be left at www.parrottandwoodsfh.com. Next is Milton Lee Hudger, Clarksville. Milton Lee Hudger, 74, of Clarksville, passed away Wednesday, October 11th, at his home under the care of Cedar Valley Hospice. A graveside service will be held at 11 o'clock a.m. on Monday, October 16th, at the Linwood Cemetery in Clarksville. Woodley Funeral Home and Crematory of Allison is caring for Milt and his family. They can be reached at woodleyfuneralhome.com or by calling area code 319-267-2507. Next is Lois Helen Lorenson. In Cedar Falls, Lois Helen Lorenson, 77, died on Sunday, October 8th, at her home. She was born on August 26, 1947, in Cylinder, Iowa, the daughter of Elmer and Margaret Lilvick Johnson. She earned her bachelor's degree in liberal arts from the University of Northern Iowa. She and her husband, David, were active entrepreneurs in Cedar Falls. Most of their lives were spent owning and operating the Pizza Hut and Stein on College Hill. Through serving beer and pizza, They became part of a number of people's lives, and they appreciate it and have a number of fond memories of that time. They also owned Lawrenson Construction, building a number of single and multifamily homes in Cedar Falls in the 1970s. Most recently, they were owners of Frontier Ford in LaPorte City. In each business venture, they worked as partners, each taking a share of the work to be done, and she loved new challenges. She was also a member of the Cedar Valley Danes and the Sons of Norway. Funeral services will be at 2 o'clock p.m. Thursday, October 19th, at Nazareth Lutheran Church Chapel in Cedar Falls, with visitation 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Interment will be 2 o'clock p.m. Friday, October 20th, at Keller Cemetery in Lovington, Illinois. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Next is Eldon Nicholas Peters, age 85, of Parkersburg, Iowa, died Wednesday, October 11th, at his home in Parkersburg. A memorial service will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Wednesday, October 18th, at the Redman Funeral and Cremation Services, Parkersburg Funeral Home, with burial in the Oak Hill Cemetery, both in Parkersburg. Visitation will be held from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Wednesday at the Redman Funeral and Cremation Services, Parkersburg Funeral Home, in Parkersburg. And online condolences may be left at www.redmanfuneral.com. Next is Marles Elaine Cook, Janesville. Marles Elaine Cook, 89, of Cedar Falls, died Thursday, October 12th, at Unity Point Allen Memorial Hospital in Waterloo. She was born November 18th in Waverly, Iowa, the daughter of Ralph C. and Valida A. Sires Honor. She graduated from Janesville Consolidated High School, where she was a first-team All-State basketball player, attended UNI for 2 years, and graduated from Des Moines Community College. On October 25, 1952, she was united in marriage to Cecil I. Cook, Jr. in Janesville. He preceded her in death on July 29, 2011. She was employed as a nursing home administrator in the area, including 16 years at Winnesheek County Care Center. She was also a member of the OES. Services for Merrill's will be at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 21st, at the Janesville United Methodist Church, with burial in the Washington Chapel Church Cemetery at 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday. An Easter Star service will be at 5 o'clock p.m. on Friday, October 20th, at Richardson Funeral Service in Cedar Falls, with visitation to follow until 7:30 p.m. Memorials may be directed to the family to be designated at a later date, and online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Next, Sheridan K. Redfern, Evansdale. Sheridan Brodecker Redfern passed Tuesday morning surrounded by loving family after a short battle with cancer at the age of 82. Sheridan dedicated her time and resources to a number of organizations to help veterans and others in need. She enjoyed many activities with a large group of friends and acquaintances, which she claimed, quote, kept her young. She will be sorely missed by all who knew her. A celebration of life is scheduled for Sheridan on Saturday, October 21st, at the Evansdale AmVets from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Next, we have Evelyn L. Hart, age 97, of Landmark Commons, Waterloo, Iowa, and she died on October 11, 2023. She was born on October 10, 1926, in Newton, Iowa, daughter of Elvin E. Hart and Gladys Damon Hart. As a child, Ms. Hart attended a one-room country school in Malacca Township, Jasper County, Iowa, then graduated from North High School in Des Moines, Iowa, in 1945, and attended Iowa State Teachers College, now the University of Northern Iowa, for 3 years. In 1987, she retired after 28 years of service as an order processing coordinator at the John Deere Product Engineering Center. Evelyn was a past member of the Waterloo Kennel Club, Waterloo Trail Riders, Sierra Club, and past president of Landmark Commons Resident Council. Her hobbies included raising registered quarter horses, bowling, camping, and golf. Currently a member of the UNI Old Central Associates Alumni Group and Catholic Daughters of the Americans Court Castile 49. She was a member of St. Edward's Church and served as a sacristan and Eucharist minister for many years. Services for Evelyn will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 19th, at St. Edward Catholic Church, with burial in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Friends may call from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. at Haggerty Weichoff Grawrup Funeral Service on South Street, where there will be a 4 o'clock Catholic Daughters of the Americas Rosary. Visitation also for an hour before services at the church. The Mass will be live-streamed. Memorials may be directed to St. Edward Church or Friendship Village Foundation. Online condolences may be left at www.haggertyweichoffgrawrup.com. Sandra, known as Sandy Irene Laub, age 80, of Shell Rock, Iowa, and formerly of Janesville, Iowa, died Thursday, October 12th, at Shell Rock Healthcare Center. Sandy was born on February 9th, 1943, daughter of Charles Dan and Florence Dre Newell. She graduated from Janesville High School in 1960 and was united in marriage to Tom Rengtorf, and they would later divorce. On October 27th, 1979, Sandra was united in marriage to Donald Laub in Missouri. During her life, Sandra worked for Carnation in Waverly, Iowa, administrative assistant in Praxair in Ankeny, Iowa, and at Quickstar in Janesville. Sandra was a member of the United Methodist Church in Janesville. Sandra's greatest enjoyment in life was time spent with her family. However, she also enjoyed old westerns, country music, traveling, monthly luncheons with her sisters, and was an avid Janesville Wildcats fan. Sandra's been cremated, and visitation will be held on Tuesday, October 17th, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. at Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, October 18th, at the United Methodist Church in Janesville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Unity Point Hospice. Online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com, whose phone number is area code 319-352-1178. Next, in Waverly, the Reverend Edgar Arthur Zell, 98, of Waverly, Iowa, died Monday, October 9th, 2023, at Bartles Lutheran Retirement Community in Waverly, Iowa. Ed was born on July 9th, 1925, in Bremer County, Iowa, the son of Arthur and Emma Mueller Zell. Ed was baptized and confirmed at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Waverly. He attended St. Paul's Lutheran School in Waverly High School and Wartburg College and Wartburg Theological Seminary. On June 5th, 1953, Ed married Verona Ruth Orth at Zion Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jubilee, Iowa. Ed served as pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Castalia, Iowa, before his call to Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Waterloo, Iowa. After retiring in 1988, they moved to Waverly. Ed was a faithful member of St. Paul's. He loved woodworking and enjoyed camping, photography, theological study and reflection, and writing. He served on the Waterloo Schools Board of Education. Funeral services for Reverend Zell will be at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, October 16th, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School in Waverly. Public visitation will be from 4 to 6 o'clock p.m. on Sunday, October 15th, at Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly, and 1 hour prior to the services at the church. Memorials may be directed to St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School or Wartburg Theological Seminary. Online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly is assisting the family. Their phone number is area code 319-352-1187. Next is Anita Marie Rao, age 82, of Scottsdale, Arizona, formerly of Waterloo, Iowa, departed this life on Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. Anita was born on April 19th, 1941, in Sumner, Iowa, the oldest daughter of the late Clarence and Rosella Rao. After graduation from Sacred Heart High School in Olwine, Iowa, she attended Gates Business College in Waterloo, Iowa. She then worked at Rath's Meatpacking in Waterloo for 23 years, until she was laid off in 1984. At a later date, there will also be a celebration of life in Waterloo, Iowa, and Anita will be laid to rest at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Sumner, Iowa. Anita's message to all of us is, live life one day at a time. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, October 16th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can listen to a recording of this reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state of Iowa that we read. Just go to our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.